Hello and welcome to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Don Hibbert.
And I'm Devin Voda.
And each week we bring you conservation topics and events from around the Endless Mountains.
Whoa, what kind of bird was that?
So that was a bird that used to be found all across the state of Pennsylvania called the Bob White.
Okay.
And if you didn't gather that from its call, yeah, I think that's how it got its name anyway. Mm-hmm. So as it turns out, the Bob White has only been gone from the Keystone State since the 90s or perhaps even the early 2000s.
So not long at all.
Not long at all. In fact, probably our parents or grandparents can maybe even remember the bird being around, wandering across dirt roads, that type of thing, or even hearing the call on an early morning. But it is unfortunately gone from the state as we speak. Or is it? We'll find out today. Yeah, but we're talking about the northern bobwhite, Colinus virginianus. And first of all, I guess the big question is, what happened to the bobwhite? So I'll jump into that a little bit, and the prehistoric evidence of the bobwhite quail in Pennsylvania really dates back to the early 1400s, and the discovery of their bones found in early human settlements.
Wow.
Early people utilized the quail as a food source, and early explorers found the quail in really in large numbers upon the arrival of Pennsylvania. They describe seeing huge flocks in the valleys of the south central and southeastern Pennsylvania. Native Americans, they used fire to open the landscape.
Right.
So we talked about fire last week, right?
A couple weeks ago.
But yeah, that cleared land really draws in the bobwhite quail. Exploration turned into settlement as the settlers expanded and vast stretches of forest really cleared for farming and for profit. And the quail, well, the quail followed.
Okay.
By the mid-1800s, quail could be found in 67 Pennsylvania counties.
Wow.
But as with most habitat-dependent wildlife, it didn't really last.
Okay.
So if you think back throughout history in the 19th century and into the early 20th century, family farms, they were abandoned or on decline. And that meant that the Pennsylvania landscape did what it does best. It resprouts.
Right.
So trees moved in and took away that habitat. Add to that, there were several severe winters. Even over harvest led to the decline of the bobwhite quail.
We see that a lot in a lot of different species typically.
Yeah, definitely. So that meant that the quail retreated into the south central and southeastern counties. And there was a few that they even found towards the Ohio border.
Okay.
The situation was actually made worse by the release of pen-raised quail by the Game Commission.
Gotcha.
There was some private entities involved, but ultimately that led to the extirpation of the bobwhite quail.
Gotcha.
So now that we know a bit about what happened to the quail, let's actually focus on the quail itself.
Sure.
Right, the bobwhite quail, maybe what it looks like, where it lives.
Yep.
We talked about the habitat and how that was a key part of, you know, the quail being in Pennsylvania.
Right.
You can get into the specifics of that. Mm-hmm. So
from what I found, the bobwhite quail is about 8 to 11 inches tall. Has some kind of unique marking, helps it really camouflage. So it's a buff white to brown color with some black and darker brown stripes throughout. To me, it kind of looks a lot like a grouse.
All right, and I think yesterday when we were talking about the show, I mentioned, I was like, what does it look like?
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't familiar, and the image I had in my head was little bird with the little thing hanging off its head, right? And we both got a kick out of that. But that's not exactly what it looks like. It doesn't have the little thing hanging off its head.
Nope.
That's the California quail, which was depicted in Bambi,
yes.
The movie Bambi. Which I sent you a picture of this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much that same size, though, minus the thing hanging off its head.
Right. So females and males do differ a little bit in coloration, as most birds do, especially in the facial and throat colorations and the wing feathers and beak coloration. So the males are going to have white facial stripes and throat in contrast to the more buff colorations of the females and juveniles. Wing feathers of males have sharply contrasting black markings, while female wings lack those black markings. So if you see one with a lot of black on it, it's most likely a male.
Okay.
So the base of the bill is black on males and yellow on females. So once again, the males take over the more like distinct black coloration. But there's white edges, dark bars, and fine wavy streaks of color, like the reddish brown and white breast, that create that mottled appearance of the feathers, very similar to a grouse's feathers.
Interesting.
Adults can grow to about 10 inches long with a 15-inch wingspan. That's a pretty big wingspan for a smaller bird like that, especially one that doesn't fly too much.
Okay.
So
I wasn't sure about that. So yeah. It doesn't fly too much.
They can fly a little bit in short bursts. About 5-second bursts is all they can fly. Most of the time they're on the ground running. So.
All right.
And like we did say before, bobwhites did get their name from their bobwhite call that we heard here at the beginning of the show. And that's typically from the unmated males during breeding season is when you'll hear that call specifically.
Trying to attract the ladies.
Right.
Okay.
As for diet of these bobwhite, they contain a variety of vegetation, seeds, and insects, but the majority of their diet does consist of seeds from annual plants. So it likes more like the legumes, kind of like soybeans, that sort of thing.
I did read that that's pretty key in their diet. Mm-hmm. They like the protein, and they like protein from the bugs, and they like the legumes.
Right.
And that's key, I guess, at certain stages of life.
Mm-hmm. Going a little bit into habitat. So there's three different kinds of habitat that they kind of need throughout different stages of their life. For the nesting stage, cover is often described as a bunch or clump of grass, more like the warm season grasses that don't get quite as heavy. They need a lot of open space underneath to be able to kind of move around a little bit and create their nest.
Okay. So there is a ground nest.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. For their brooding cover, when they are sitting on eggs and taking care of their little ones. Their cover is described as a mixture of forbs and legumes, so they kind of go more towards that food source. Provides a combination of overhead cover as well as that food source, like I talked about, that's good for the chicks as well. And the mixture of plants attract lots of protein-packed insects.
There it is. That's what I was mentioning before. I thought I read. Yeah.
So most of the plants provide that seed-producing aspect as well. So they like the seeds, the insects, the legumes. It's all right there. So the brood-rearing habitat needs to be bare ground underneath to ensure that the chicks the size of bumblebees can move pretty easily underneath. So they're pretty tiny when they first hatch.
Did you say bumblebees?
I did.
That's crazy. That is a small bird.
They are. They're very tiny when they're born.
Probably susceptible to predation.
Yes. I will get into that here in a second. Okay. So then when we move into more, once they get bigger, they're not sitting on a nest, they don't have babies, they need just general protection. So this cover, it's the most crucial of the three stages that they're going to be in, and it requires the least amount of acreage. So they don't need a ton to make this coverage, but it is a woody cover with high density of stems low to the ground. So more of like that brush line. You're not going to find them out in like the open forest or an open field as much. Kind of like that, the hedgerow sort of type.
The edge
habitat
or transition, I suppose it would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as we talked just now with predators, some of their like more common predators include cooper hawks, so those bigger birds, raccoons, possums, skunks, and foxes. So those things that are really low to the ground, good at sniffing out different things. So those are their main predators.
Okay.
I did see that there's only about a 25% survival rate of a clutch of chicks typically.
Ooh, that's pretty low.
Yeah. That's probably why I did see that a clutch is typically 12 to 15 eggs at a time. And they'll do like 2 to 3 clutches a year depending on weather. So they're really trying to get as many offspring out there as they can because it is such a low survival rate, unfortunately.
Okay.
When adults with chicks do encounter predators, they perform distraction displays such as fluttering or wing dragging, trying to take the eye off of the babies, try and distract, but they do really use that camouflaging color to their advantage as well. So maybe if we came upon one of these bobwhite quail walking through, I saw that they're going to kind of like freeze and squat down and try not to move at all, try and blend in as best as they can.
Yeah, and they, I'm sure, you know, just from what you described about the habitat and their coloration, they probably blend in pretty well.
I would think so, yeah. Yep.
So that leads us to the restoration, and we wanted to focus on that a little bit. So after the Pennsylvania Game Commission survey, they confirmed that there were indeed no wild quail within the Commonwealth boundaries. And that was in, like I said, 2014. So they started what they call the Northern Bobwhite Quail Management Plan.
Okay.
And that was drafted, or that carried us from 2011 to 2020. The first part of this plan was really to determine how many quail were left in the state, which they narrowed down really quickly. No quail. And then they surveyed the historic routes, and they, you know, they really focused on detection. And nothing was there. So they came up with this habitat model to really examine the entire state and determine how much suitable quail habitat still existed.
Okay.
They found out that 140,000 acres of suitable habitat was found, but it was still fragmented.
Okay.
They started to explore potential areas, and they also looked at historical strongholds. They narrowed in on a place called the Letterkenny Army Depot.
Okay.
And that's located in Franklin County. Okay. I'm familiar with Gettysburg, down that way. So this is Chambersburg, not too far away. And that was selected as the very first bobwhite quail focus area.
Okay.
Or what they deemed the BQFA. They really got into a comprehensive management plan. It was developed, and the habitat work began in 2017. And that included prescribed fire and overstory tree removal. So reform that edge habitat that we were just talking about. So the last part of this is the announcement. So just last week, the Game Commission officials released a group of 50 bobwhite quails back on the grounds of the Army Depot there in Franklin County.
Awesome.
And that was part of a larger group of 76 that have been released so far. And they're working with partners from Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, a couple other states to relocate some bobwhite quail. So those are the partner states that they've established, and they're getting the quail from those states.
Okay.
One final note is there won't be any quail hunting permitted in the near future. And the PGC has a management plan that really outlines the steps to continue restoring the population through 2030.
Awesome.
So pretty exciting news. I love, you know, reintroduction of species. Yeah. That were once here. You know, we had, you know, things like the white-tailed deer and the eagle, fisher, all have been reestablished. And, you know, they once weren't a part of our state for a while.
Yeah.
Now they're all coming back. So quail soon to follow.
If you know anything about our show, you know, it'd be like fun facts.
Fun facts. We haven't done that in a while.
We haven't.
All right. And you found some?
I did. The oldest northern bobwhite on record was just over 6 years old. Doesn't seem old, but I mean, for a little bird like this that's out in the wild, they're doing pretty well. I did see that the average lifespan for these typically is about 8 to 12 months, probably because predation is so prevalent with them and they are smaller. But I mean, to get one up to 6 years, that's crazy.
It is, yeah.
Like I said a little bit before, with them having such short lifespans, they actually, because of how many clutches they will produce in a year, they end up giving about 25 offspring or more a year. So they're really trying to up that population pretty quick.
They're working hard.
They are. So during non-breeding seasons, the northern bobwhites can conjugate into convoys of about 20 birds, typically. And at night, the members of this convoy roost on the ground in a circle.
I saw that.
With their tails inwards and their heads pointing out. So they're all on watch a little bit here for predators coming from every direction.
Yeah, and they're also keeping warm.
Right. Right,
keeping each other warm.
We heard the bobwhite call at the beginning. That is actually one call that they have, and they actually have quite a few different calls. They have 11 to aid in the avoidance of enemies. 6 different calls for mating, and 2 parental calls to kind of yell at the young.
Wow.
So they got quite a few calls out
there. They do, yeah.
And my last one, like I mentioned a little bit before, their average flight that they have only lasts about 5.1 seconds. So just far enough away to get out of the way of danger, but not too far.
Yeah, kind of like that quick reaction.
Right. Yep. And they did note that they're, if you kind of come up on one and they do fly, it's going to be that explosive off-the-ground flight like a lot of game birds.
Oh, yeah.
So,
the pheasant.
Right.
Yeah, every time, well, hasn't happened in a while, but man, you're walking out in the woods mm-hmm. and a pheasant takes off.
It scares you.
Oh, yeah, most of the time, yeah.
Yeah, so we're definitely excited to see the bobwhite making their return.
Yeah, that's exciting. Well, we also have a couple of events today, mm-hmm. which is rare. We haven't had too many events lately, but yeah. So the first one we wanted to mention was Penn State Extension has a webinar. It's April 17th at 9 a.m., and this one's a good one. So it's managing invasive knotweeds. A lot of people have this problem, especially if you live close to water, but not so much anymore. They've spread all over the place. The invasive knotweeds are well known for their aggressive growth and their ability to spread. And they create these dense monocultures where no other plants can really grow. Due to their prolific resprouting abilities, the invasive knotweeds require specific persistent management techniques delivered at proper timings for the most effective control. And you're going to learn how to control them in this webinar. So, the Managing Invasive Knotweeds will walk you through the management options for these difficult plants. So, like I said, that's a Penn State Extension webinar, and it's on April 17th at 9 a.m. I put this on our Facebook page, so you can register from there and find out how to control these pests.
Yeah, sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
So the event I found is down at Vosburgh Neck State Park.
Okay.
So fairly local to us.
Sure.
It is a pine tree tea event.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Spice up your tea a little bit.
Yeah. So the eastern white pine is one of Pennsylvania's native trees. So they're going to take you through a walk at the park on pine plantation and learn more about the tree's significance, and then learn about responsible foraging and enjoy a sample of freshly brewed pine needle tea.
Good for vitamin C.
Yes.
So, just a little history note. Mm-hmm. I think sailors used to drink pine tree tea to get the vitamin C. Well, that rhymes.
Yeah.
But to keep away the scurvy. So.
Okay. So you will meet at the parking area by the Riverside Barn. And then they'll caravan approximately 1 mile into the park's pine plantation to take you out to the trees and get you some tea out there. They did want to note that participants with existing health conditions should consult a health provider before consuming any of this tea, just to make sure.
Yep, good note.
So this is taking place April 3rd, so coming up here pretty quick, at 4:30. Once again at Vosburgh Neck State Park, and please register on their website beforehand to ensure that there's enough supplies, and even consider bringing your own reusable mug to help reduce waste.
Okay, sounds like a fun event.
Yeah, so I guess that does it for today's show then. If you have questions related to our shows, you can contact the Conservation District by calling 570-782-2105. If you missed a portion of today's show, you can go to our website, www.suscondistrict.org, and find our Conservation Corner page with past episodes and links to information about past episodes. You've been listening to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Devin Voda.
And I'm Don Hibbert, saying enjoy the outdoors.